Welcome back, everyone. It's another episode of Inside Boxing. We're presented by PPV.com in association with Uncrowned and Yahoo Sports. I'm Dan Canobio. He is the champ, Chris Algieri, and today we're buzzing. We're buzzing, my folks, because the New York Knicks won Game 1 of the NBA Finals. The Knicks are up in an NBA Finals. That hasn't happened since O.J. Simpson was in a white Bronco going down the interstate in California. That's how long it's been. Chris, how are you, man? Let's go!
I'm great. I'm really good. So I didn't realize this. A flight from South Florida to Dallas is the exact length of an NBA final game. So I watched the entire game, sat in my seat, and it was like literally the pre-show was starting. Sat down, watched the entire game. As the game ended, we were landing. I was like, this is ideal. So I was in my seat literally going like, I felt like such a fool because no one else was watching it around me. I don't know how really? I was the only person watching. I mean, listen, South Florida coming to Dallas.
It's the best option though on live TV on the flight.
Oh, it was great. I was locked in for the entire 3 hours that it was, and hell of a game. It was
up and down,
up and down.
Well, literally, you were up, and then you
and,
landed.
Yeah,
and then
I was up on the way up and down on the way down. Down on the way up, but yeah.
I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here. It's just one game, but these cardiac Knicks, man, 12 straight playoff wins, 3 more to go before reaching immortality, 53-year drought in New York City.
Yikes.
Have you seen the scenes, bro? Yesterday's game was in San Antonio, and there were still about 10,000 deep outside the garden just chilling.
That's sick. I mean, listen, New York, man, New York fans come out. It's hard to top New York fans, especially Knicks fans. We're diehards. We've been in pain for a long time. We're used to being in pain. We deal with the pain. But feast and famine, man, we're up. We're up.
I know. Let's get into it. I could talk Knicks all day, but this is a boxing podcast,
folks.
That's right. I did cash in my bet. I know a couple people did tweet at me for an undisclosed amount of money. A good chunk. What a bet. And I'm also happy for our friend Sean Sweeney, associate head coach of the Spurs for at least 6 more games. He accepted a head coaching position for the Orlando Magic. He is a massive boxing fan. He's a listener of this podcast, like one of the biggest boxing fans I know. Great dude. So congrats to him. I'll see you in Orlando. Come to the Carib for some fights. Hopefully he still hooks us up with Knicks tickets because now the Magic come into the Garden twice, whereas the Spurs only came in once from the Western Conference. He got me tickets to Spurs at Knicks. And he also got me tickets to a Spurs game when I was there for the Roach fight. Great guy.
What perfect timing on that one. But now we're in Orlando. Like that's not that far from me. I'm going to go drive up and catch some games, make a little weekend out of it.
All right. That concludes our basketball segment here on Inside Boxing. Let's get to the boxing news because there's actually a lot going on right now. I thought it was going to be a little bit of a dead week with only one big fight this weekend over in London. Zuffa heads to London for Chris Billum-Smith and Ryan Rosinski, a cruiserweight fight. But we'll start with news out of the welterweight division. The WBO has ordered Keyshawn Davis versus Devin Haney. It could be an August, early September fight. Keyshawn Davis is now the mandatory to Devin Haney from the WBO, despite never fighting at welterweight. He has one fight at 140, and he barely made the weight there. He blew past the weight at 135, but this is boxing. I'm not going to complain about this one. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes we complain about these mandatories. Other times, we're like, what the heck is going on? If the WBO has to force their hand here and force boxing's hand to get a fight like Keyshawn Davis and Devin Haney, I'm going to look the other way. I'm going to say, right, this is a good one. You know, sometimes they're bad, sometimes they're good. Keyshawn versus Devin, good.
Yeah, and this is one of those things where young fighters, pay attention. Everyone's listening. When you guys call people out, fights can happen. You can make fights happen. Like this is, like you said, Keyshawn has not fought at welterweight. He has alluded that he wanted to go up to welterweight. But you know, you guys get into some Twitter beefs and get into some arguments, and people are paying attention. Even the governing bodies, and they're mandating, like you said. So usually this goes the other way. We're like, oh, where did this fight come from? But this one is a good one. I mean, yeah, is he skipping the line? But I think he kind of can. He's that kind of guy. Keyshawn is you know, he's a former world champion. This is a big money fight. So I'm like you. I'm not mad about that.
I think the WBO is using that clause they have, which I actually like this clause, where if you're a champion at a weight class, you have mandatory position if you want to move up.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They've done that before. Like, fighters have done this before. I actually
they did it
that
to me.
Clause.
They did it to me when I fought Pacquiao. It was right into the WBO world title fight at welterweight. I was world champion at 140. I was unranked at 47. Didn't have any fights at 47 of note, but I was a world champion at 140. So when I moved up to fight Pacquiao, I went right into the position to fight the world champion.
That's a rule that really kind of makes sense.
It does.
You see a lot of these that don't make sense, and we're like, all right, how does this guy mandatory, like WBC making Conor Benn their number one mandatory, is absolutely absurd. But I like that. You're a champion in a weight class right below. You go up to 147, or move up a division, you get a first crack. But that's kind of not the case here because Davis isn't the WBO champion at 140. He was the WBO champion at 135. So it was a little bit of a gray area. He jumped two divisions. But like you said, if we get Keyshawn versus Haney, if it has to go this way through a mandatory or a purse bid, or I would doubt it goes to purse bid, or they blow past the purse bid and they come up with an agreement, I'm all for it. Just where's it going to be? Because Haney hasn't fought this year, and we're now into June, and we talked about this on this show because, you know, I feel like he's haggling over negotiations. He doesn't really have a promoter. We saw how that Rolly fight negotiations fell apart there because of the financial aspect of it. And then you see Bill Haney and Devin Haney a good few weeks ago tweet out $100 million contract, and we all assumed that it was going to be Zuffa, but it's been pretty quiet there. In terms of Haney's, will this be a ring card? Will this be part of this new DAZN approach where we're seeing top-ranked fighters with Keyshawn Davis fighting matchroom guys? Not saying that Haney's a matchroom guy, but this could be that push that we're seeing from DAZN to kind of put on these marquee events, maybe get this fight on TNT, maybe figure out a way to satisfy Devin Haney's needs because, let's be honest, that guy, he expects top dollar at this point because he's been paid top dollar despite not really returning on investment.
Yeah, he's been making top dollar with every organization, every network that he's dealt with over the past, what would be like 6-7 years now? Like you get accustomed to a certain level and you have that as a negotiating chip. And the fighting family Haney, I'm talking about Bill too, because he fights in the negotiating table really, really well. They know what they are, and they know what they bring to the table, and they have that negotiating chip because they have been there. But to the point of possibly, is this a DAZN push? I think that would be really smart on their part. You see them more and more from a network standpoint pushing big fights. Because listen, if you're asking for top dollar for a yearly subscription, you got to put on good events, you got to put on good fights, you got to get people's interest peaked so they're willing to pay that money every month.
Yeah, Roach versus Cepeda just got announced.
Good fight.
We'll get to that in a second. That's on DAZN and TNT. You have July 4th, Abdullah Mason fighting Joe Cardina, which is the debut of this DAZN TNT partnership. So this summer, we got back-to-back months with pretty interesting main events on linear television. Can we add August? Can we add September for Haney versus Keyshawn Davis? Or if it's a ring card, so be it. As long as it happens. Like, I want to see this fight. Keyshawn is deserving of it. I know we just talked about the ridiculousness maybe of him never fighting at 147, but the dude's a world-class talent. And I think Devin Haney, we can all agree that he is the best welterweight in the world right now. How does this fight play out between Devin Haney and Keyshawn Davis?
It's a good fight, and it's a really good fight, and it's one of those fights where it may come down just to timing and experience. Obviously, Devin Haney has a lot more experience at the highest level. If you compare their resumes, there's no comparison. Devin Haney is obviously way deeper in terms of the experience of guys that he's been in the ring with. Big fight experience, Devin's got that as well. But in terms of styles, man, it's a great matchup. You know, Keyshawn, we haven't seen him fight a pure boxer the way that Devin has. Also, it's at a different weight. So it's a really complicated one to break down. If this does come to fruition, actually happening, we're going to have a lot of fun breaking this one down because you got two stylists who are excellent, excellent top operators and are in their prime. So hell of a fight.
Yeah, you got to figure, like, I don't think Devin Haney has fought a complete fighter like Keyshawn Davis.
Well, there's not a lot of complete fighters like Keyshawn Davis in the world today, to be honest.
Like, he's tenacious.
Yeah.
He goes for the kill.
He's got that Bud gene where he's trying to hurt you. Like he's mean, you know, he's a fun guy. He's a funny guy. But when he locks in, he is very serious and mean.
The only downfalls for Keyshawn the last couple of fights have been the weight. And now we're giving him 7 more pounds. Like he really said after the fight, in his last fight, like a fight that he did not want. And I always wonder with you guys fighters, is it hard to train for certain fights that you don't want? Is it hard to get up for certain fights? You think, no, man, you're a professional. You got to go through the training camps. But I think for the Albright rematch, I don't think he was up for that fight. And he still performed really well and dominated. But he said after the fight, like, making weight is hard for me. I can't do this making weight thing. So now let's give him 7 more pounds. Fight at welterweight where he's a little undersized, but that's just where he's probably going to settle in as. But I don't think that Haney has faced someone as ferocious and in their physical prime or approaching their physical prime. Or you could say Norman, but he was still a little green. Ryan Garcia, I still don't know how to make sense of that fight. Progre was on the tail end. Vilimachenko was on the tail end. Kambosos was on the tail end. Jojo Diaz was beginning the tail end. Linares, tail end. Gamboa, old. So, like, that's Haney's last couple fights. And we know how good Keyshawn is. But then you have to throw in the fact that Keyshawn's never fought at the weight class. Is he a little too green? Haney is so good at disarming opponents. He's so good at controlling tempo. He's not a star attraction because he just doesn't, I wouldn't classify him as that, but he's just solid. You know what you're getting out of Haney. Like, I would probably say that Haney would be the betting favorite, but it wouldn't be by much.
No, rightfully so, betting favorite, based on all the things we're talking about, experience, weight class, being in with better opposition. But Keyshawn's young and hungry, and he can punch. You know, I'm curious to see what that power looks like at 47, because listen, he went up to 40 and started punching harder. So maybe the weight has been a real issue. 35, I didn't think he was that big of a 35-pounder, honestly. And then when he went to 40, certainly not a big 40-pounder, a true 40-pounder perhaps. But now at 47, you got to think he's going to be the smaller guy, because Devin's big. Devin's a big 47-pounder at this point. He's grown into these weight classes. And in Devin's defense, those older guys that he fought, Devin was still developing. And he was, and they knew he was killing himself to make weight. 35 was crazy. I can't believe he made 35 as long as he did. You know, he hung around for that Lomachenko fight, but that was a feat to make that weight back then. And then even with the Ryan fight, we were backstage. Remember that when they were coming up the Barclays, up the stadium, and I could see Devin's face. He was sucked in to make 140, and he goes to 47 and looked bigger and stronger than ever. So obviously dropping Norman with that left hook early on. So there's a lot of questions about this fight. You know, even though you say you know what you get with Devin, do we though? Because I don't know, because I think we're seeing the most complete version of Devin here, if we're going off of his last performance against Brian. But it's a good
fight. I just think he's more dependable.
He'll
be the favorite for a reason.
I've always said this about Devin. In terms of his talent, yes, he's super talented. But like when we were talking about the Ryan and Devin matchup leading up to it, I was like, well, Ryan's more physically gifted, more talented, but Devin's discipline is something different. I think that's ultimately his best asset. As good as he is talented, as physical and athletic as he is, his discipline, I think, is his strongest point. That kid locks in camp and on fight night. So there's that. Because Keyshawn, that's really the only question with him, right? Because physically, he's got all the talent. We've seen him perform at his best. We've also seen him underperform because of maybe outside of the ring issues, because of maybe a lack of discipline at times. Him even saying, I don't want to make weight anymore. I don't know. The top operators do until they can't, and they keep it to themselves. But with Keyshawn, it's kind of an open book in terms of what's going on upstairs, because he doesn't really filter himself. So I don't know. There's a lot of question marks in this fight, even though, you know, everything we just said.
Hope we get it.
Yes.
Hope we get it.
I'd be surprised, honestly. I'm being pessimistic.
Haney? Come on, man. We're on like fight number 3. Like, this is negotiation number 3 of 2026. He hasn't fought this year. He had an amazing win over Brian Norman, and you're really going to sit out the first half and potentially the entire year? The Ryan Garcia fight is just sailed. I don't know what happened to that. Rolly Romero fight never came to fruition. Here comes Keyshawn Davis. Haney, come on, bro. Like, you want to bill yourself as one of the top guys in the sport. Figure out a way to make this fight happen.
Yeah, dude, you never know what goes on behind closed doors and at these negotiating tables. I always say this is the best sport in the world, worst business. And a lot of this sport depends on what happens behind closed doors.
Yeah. A fight that is official, it just got announced. I really like it. Lamont Roach versus Zepeda. I don't know why I want to call him Jose Zepeda. That's not his name. It's William Zepeda. Lamont Roach, William Zepeda, August 1st. Vacant WBC title. Shakur vacated the belt after not paying the sanctioning fees. So this is a good one here. We've seen a lot of times where vacant fights, or you were two guys we've never heard of, or a guy we've never heard of going up against an established name. But this is a good fight. Lamont Roach going back down to 135 after fighting Pitbull at 140. He told us in a lot of interviews that he can go to either weight. I think that is huge for him and very beneficial. And Zepeda, who's coming off that Shakur loss, but fought Shakur really tough.
Yep.
If you look, especially in hindsight. In hindsight, when you see how poorly Teofimo performed and you see how good Zepeda, great fight. And I love that it's for a vacant strap.
Yeah, great fight. Lamont deserves this. He's been earning his stripes in tough fight after tough fight after tough fight. I believe this is going to be his fourth world title fight in three-way classes, because he defended his title at 130. Then he moves to 35, got the draw with Gervonta. Then he moves up to 40, gets the draw with Cruz. Then he moves back down to 35. So that's the third weight class, up and down, but fourth title fight in a row. But I think it's deserved, because a lot of people look at these draws like, yo, he should have won the Gervonta fight. And the Cruz fight was a pick'em fight where I think a lot of people had him winning. I had it a draw. I thought it was a proper draw. But regardless, he performed really well in a new weight class that he really didn't belong in. Because obviously, if he's going back down to 35, that's not really where he wants to campaign. And like you said, his ability to move up and down, he's really hit his stride at the perfect time. You know, he caught a bad loss to Jamel Herring, like underperformed. I don't know if it was the lights. I don't know if it was the opportunity. I don't know if it was just too young and too green against Jamel, who's a super, super seasoned guy. But yeah, since then, I mean, he's really put the pedal to the floor and is coming really into his own at such a good time.
Yeah, he's 30 years old. This is where you got to start making the big fights. He's on quite a run. To go, was a champ at 130, but was still kind of under the radar, to the point where he was a massive underdog against Gervonta Davis. I remember when that fight was made being like, oh man, this is going to be
15-1, 16-1, something like that?
I remember saying this is going to be another highlight reel knockout for Tank. He was just coming off of the Frank Martin win, and I was like, okay, this is not going to be much of a competitive fight, and I was wrong.
Well, we did our show in Brooklyn together. We were in the same room for once, actually doing the show together, and we were talking about this fight. And I was like, hey, man, I mean, Lamont can trouble him. I think Gervonta might get him late because Gervonta has that game changing power. But I think in terms of their ability to box and use his ring IQ, Lamont's right there, and he showed that.
Yeah, being around him that week was like kind of the first time I ever interacted with him. The amount of confidence that guy has,
oh, he's awesome.
How cohesive his team was. And then I worked the Prime broadcast for that. I was doing backstage interviews, and I went to Tank's room first, and it was like a morgue in there. It was so tight, dead silent, just weird vibes in there. Go over to Lamont's, they're having a good time. There's cohesiveness, there's music playing. He just has a good team, and he has supreme confidence, goes out there and arguably beats Tank, and that's when he became a real name in this sport. And then the Roach fight too, like going into enemy territory there.
You mean
really
the Cruz fight?
Yeah, sorry. The Cruz fight, which I also thought was a draw. I thought he fought tough early. Like, it took him a little bit to warm up. He went down early.
Broke his hand too.
Broke his hand. It's a good fight. Zepeda's going to bring it. I mean, this is a good stylistic fight too, because Zepeda just knows one way, and that's forward. He's still threw 80 to 90 punches against Shakur, which I was shocked. I didn't think he'd be able to do that. And still had moments against Shakur. So he's going to, you know what Zepeda's going to do. He's going to come in there and be on that front foot. And like, I feel like Roach likes to be on the front foot, even though there are times where I'm like, dude, you need to box more. You use your athleticism. So we could have ourselves in a brawl if Roach really wants to make it that. I don't know who to I'd probably favor Roach in this fight.
The issue with Roach is he's a pocket fighter. And he's a high contact fighter. He's not a mover. He's going to stay in front of you. He's going to catch and shoot. He's going to control distance. He's going to hit you just as you step over that line. And he's going to try and control you in that way. He's a control fighter, but he will stay in the pocket. He's not going to get on his feet and move like Devin Farmer. Tevin Farmer gave Zepeda a lot of trouble because Tevin has feet and he uses his feet. Even an elder Tevin Farmer had very, very good feet. And stylistically, he was able to utilize that and keep moving, keep countering. And there are things that Tevin and Lamont do very similarly in terms of, you know, they're catching and shooting, being in front of you, the shoulder roll defense. But Lamont doesn't move the way Tevin does. Although we saw Lamont move in the second half of the Cruz fight because he had to with the hand. So he's got that ability. Does he choose to move a little bit more in this fight? Is that the difference? Does he stay in the pocket and get overwhelmed? Does he stay in the pocket and make the fight too close? Does he catch another draw? I mean, it's a really tough fight to handle. To figure out.
In a row would be crazy.
Crazy. I might bet it. I might bet the draw because Zepeda is one of those guys who pushes.
I wonder if the draw will be less than the usual
4,000.
Yeah, I think maybe because, I mean, for him to get a draw again, like he's, you know, he didn't win the title against Tank and he didn't get the, I think what was on the line for the Pitbull fight? It was like a vacant title.
Yeah, there was a title on that. It might have been an interim. I think it was an interim.
Right. And he didn't get that. And now he's back trying to get that WBC title, a lightweight. And it's interesting because lightweight is like changing and right before our eyes, like Tank, we don't know what's going on with Tank, so I don't really put him in there. But, you know, Abdullah Mason has the WBO. Murataya has the IBF. Murataya is fighting Kinsei Sao on this card. This one right
on
here.
On the card, that's cool. But that's gonna be Murataya's last fight at 35, regardless.
Yeah, he's probably going to 140. Yeah. And then you have the WBA situation where they ordered Tank to fight Schofield. And like you said, don't know how to classify Tank. Is he ever going to come back? I don't know. Then we have my guy Lucas Body, MVP fighter, who WBA needs to just come up with a decision here. Like, come on. They're jerking this guy Body around who has come up the hard way. I've gotten to know him over the years. Like, he doesn't have the star profile of Tank or even the promoter of Schofield with Golden Boy. So he's not going to be handed a fight. Like,
no.
He went in there and earned it. I'd love to see Body get that chance against Schofield if Tank decides to, I don't know, do whatever Tank does.
I don't think Tank's coming right back into the Schofield fight. I don't see that really in the cards. I think Body could get that opportunity. Body Schofield, great fight. I think that's a good fight.
Bring it.
Bring that fight because, and that's an interesting fight too. I don't want to move too far away from the Lamont Roach because I'm done on that one. But because we've seen Schofield get hurt late in a fight against Tejas. He's a Pro Box TV guy who's fought a Mexican fighter. He's tough as nails. And Body has late power. We've seen that. So Body's one of those guys where you as long as the fight's going on, you got to be locked.
Man.
And Schofield is super good, super talented, of course. But listen, 12 rounds is a long time for a puncher to find a spot. And Body's the kind of guy who only needs one. So it's a good fight.
That can be made too. I feel like MVP is willing to work with these guys, and
they're willing to work with anybody. I love that of MVP. They get their guys into position. They're not disruptors. I always say that there's when you come to a table, there's deal makers and there's deal disruptors. MVP are deal makers.
Disruptors. I think Kisa likes to say that they are disruptors going into MMA though, in a different way.
Well, they're disrupting culture. That's a different thing.
Yes.
That's cool. You know, disrupting culture is cool. Disrupting deals, disrupting good fights, that's not cool.
Nah. Anything else on Roach before
yes,
we move on to
Roach.
Our FanDuel segment?
Because Roach is a Pro Box TV fighter, for those of you who don't know. So I've had a lot of personal dealings with the whole Roach team. We call a lot of the fights for his entire gym. Super talented guys out of the DMV. And everything you said about him is absolutely true. That confidence is genuine. They have a system. The Papa Roach there, Lamont Roach Sr.
Papa Roach, isn't that like a band?
That's a band, yeah. That's a throwback. That's a real throwback. Our older listeners will get that one. But Papa Lamont Roach Sr. Wow. is, that guy is all business. And he knows how to create champions. They have so many national champions out of the gym, all trained by Roach Sr. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Awesome.
I actually want to bring my nephew down there because I'm like, you obviously know something about these amateurs. You figure this thing out. And now with his son, Lamont, and Jordan Roach also coming up from behind too, coming from much younger, but coming up, or younger in his career, I should say, but coming up, they are figuring out the pro game as well. And everything with them is a business. So they're systematically approaching everything they're doing in this business the right way. It's been really cool to see because I get to see it on the inside because of the dealings of Pro Box and Lamont. Also a little caveat, this fight not being in Texas. Vegas.
Yeah, Vegas.
Is more neutral. Yes.
Yeah.
Huge Mexican audience. But the Mexican audience has already met Roach. They met him in Cruz. They met him.
It's a different thing.
They like this guy
crowd,
can fight.
A Texas crowd for Mexicans is way different than this is in a smaller room in Vegas.
Thank you. Thank you. So the home field advantage will be less. Yes, it's still going to be in Zepeda's side, but much, much less. And that was a point of contention in negotiating this fight. A little inside boxing here coming from me over here.
Yes.
So that was a point of contention in making this fight actually to be announced. So I'm happy to hear that's in Vegas.
Yeah, we even said it in our lead up to that one. I was in my cowboy hat in Texas. I was like, guys, there's going to be some fuckery here. And there wasn't.
There wasn't.
Really? I don't know. I had no problem. When I watched it back the second time, I was like, okay, yeah, I can see how Pitbull won. But I can also see a draw. I don't think Rhodes lost, but she didn't. But he came away with not much. This fight's also on TNT.
Cool.
Which is really cool.
Very cool.
So we just said before, like summer, July and August is set one a month on what they're calling the fight. And I've heard that they're going to have like a studio lead in, kind of like an inside the NBA, literally same set in Atlanta with fighters on there. And they're going to give it the treatment. You know, they're going to have a pregame show like boxing. I don't remember the last time boxing's had that or ever had
real production. I love it.
That's pretty damn cool. I'm really curious to see how it looks. I know that House of Highlights and Bleacher Report is going to get in on the digital side and really push these fights. So I think it's really cool. TNT, I know it's not the biggest network, but it's still Turner, it's still Linear, it's still something. They're investing in the sport, and I think these are two good main events for the summer. All right, it's time to get to our FanDuel segment right now. New customers, sign up for FanDuel Sportsbook, place a $5 wager, and get $50 in bonus bets each day for 7 days. That means you'll get $350 in bonus bets when you bet $5 for the next 7 days. You could bet on the Knicks and the Spurs. That series, I think, should last 7 days. Knicks might end it by Wednesday and sweep these guys. So throw some money potentially on the Knicks, who came in as underdogs on the road yesterday. They covered. There's a lot of good prop bets out there. Obviously, you could bet on the boxing as well. So shout out to our friends over at FanDuel. So let's get into the odds this weekend. We got Chris Billum-Smith going up against Ryan Rosinski. This is a fight between two top 10 rated cruiserweights. Right now, is Billum-Smith is the favorite, minus 430. It's a pretty sizable favorite in this fight, but that makes sense. Billum-Smith has a much better resume, has much better wins. Billum-Smith stoppage plus 240. Billum-Smith on points is minus 120. Rosinski is, like I said, doesn't have the greatest strength of schedule, but the guy has crazy power. I think he has like a 95% KO ratio. So I think the only way Rosinski can win is by stoppage. Billum-Smith is tough as nails, never been stopped, and that's plus 420. This is a pretty good fight. This is Zuffa over in the UK for the first time.
This is an action fight. This is a really good action fight. So Rosinski, he has that draw against Yamil Alberto Peralta, who I just called his fight recently against Robin Safar. And he's a tricky guy. He moves, he can punch, Argentinian, he's tall, he's long, deals with pressure really, really, really well. So a guy like Rosinski, who never takes a backward step, he was pressuring that guy the entire time. They fought twice. The first fight, everyone thought that the Argentinian won. They fought over in Canada. It was a split decision that Rosinski won, but it was declared we gotta run this thing right back. And then they did, and then they fought to a draw. So he was in tough both times with that guy. But again, stylistically, I can understand why. Because Rosinski just comes forward. Rosicki? I keep saying Rosicki. I keep thinking of
Rosinski.
Rosinski is...
I might be wrong there too.
I think it's Rosicki. Because Rosinski is our guy from New York. But Rosicki, Ryan Rosicki, he's a come forward two-handed banger, dude. His nickname is Bruiser, and it's a very good nickname.
He looks like a cyborg.
He does. He looks like a Bond villain. Like he's just like tatted and mean. He's jacked. But he fights like that too. He's a rough guy. He's a bruiser. And Chris Billum-Smith is basically just a stone. I mean, the punches he took in the Zerto Ramirez fight was sick. And just coming forward, body shots, everything. Never been stopped. Super durable. Tough as nails. I couldn't believe the punches he took in that Zerto fight. But that's just kind of the way he is. So we've got a really interesting matchup where I think neither one of these guys are movers. They're not going to be boxing around each other. They're going to meet in the center of the ring and they're going to bang. and obviously bunch more experience for Chris Billam Smith. But like, how long does he really have to be able to fight that way?
That's what I mean.
He's been fighting tough against tough opposition for a long time, and he's taken a lot of damage over the years. And like, can Rozicki keep that up? It's a good fight. It's a really good fight.
You think it's worth a sprinkle Rozicki stoppage? Or Rozicki points is also massive. There's a lot
of
value
if
there.
I would go
plus 420. I'm sorry. Rozicki points is plus 950.
Wow. What's a Rozicki stoppage?
Plus 420.
That's still a lot. That's still big. So,
well, they're kind of just like, Vegas is kind of banking on Billam Smith and his
durability and experience.
Toughness.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, if you wanted to sprinkle money on Rozicki, if you feel like the youth or the youth, because I don't think that different in age, it's just freshness. If you wanted to bet the freshness, there's a lot of money there. There's a lot of value in the freshness either way, whether it's a decision or a stoppage. But more than likely, Chris Billam Smith does what he does and uses his experience to get the win.
Well, even there, all these options have a lot of value, because minus 120 is not that bad for Billam Smith points.
No.
Billam Smith's stoppage is plus 240. So it's pretty much comes down to, it's just like, all right, choose your guy and how you think he's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And there's good value on all four options.
So this is basically just fans of either guy betting. Like, I like this guy. He's going to win.
I think Billam Smith will win by decision. And minus 120 is pretty good. Like, I bet last week minus 105 for Shaq. You know, I don't always like the minus money, obviously, because you have to put up more. But sometimes there's good value there when it's that low. When it's in the 100 range, I usually go for that.
And then if you want to get fancy and smart and do some parlays, I mean, you can take that risk.
Parlay that with a Knicks sweep?
Oof. Oh, I don't like to mix sports. That's on a parlay? Oof.
Did you see that? There's a guy out there who he parlayed Michigan to win the national title in basketball, USA to win the Olympic gold, and then Knicks versus Spurs to face each other in the finals. $1.7
million. Whoa! Savage. Savage.
That's four different sports. So much has to go right for that.
That guy has ice in his veins.
Yeah, they kept interviewing him stuff. Like, they offered him a cash out. Like, when the Spurs were down 3-2 to the Thunder last series, they offered him a cash out of $570,000.
And he looked at them and was like, nope.
No, because I think he's like a professional gambler.
Yeah, you think? You think?
Yeah, he is. I think he's called the Parlay Prince or something. Like, he's a professional gambler. So, like, him bowing out is not good for his brand. Like, him staying in it and getting interviewed every day and, like, is good. He won. Good for him.
Savage.
You can win, too, with FanDuel. So, go and sign up this week. They're running a really cool promo where you place a $5 wager. You get $50 in bonus bets each day for the next 7 days. That can be up to $350 in bonus bets.
That's crazy.
Only a $5 bet.
I'm doing that right after we're done. That's what I'm spending the next couple hours before Fighter Beating's out here in Texas. I'm doing that.
All right. Sounds good.
Sprinkling money all over.
All over the place. Make it rain in Texas. All right, let's get to our voicemails. Thank you to everyone that left them. I'm always humbled and honored and privileged when we put out the bat signal that it's voicemail time and they all come rolling in. My computer, I have it set up to Google. It just rings all day long. And it's a good feeling. So let's start it off with the real question here, Chris.
Best pizza and wings combo on Long Island.
Whoa.
I mean, I don't really usually like places that combine both. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm going to get a pizza place, I'm going to go to a straight up pizza place. I'm going wings, I want straight up wings.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I got a spot.
Never,
you know Albert's Pizza, Copeg?
No.
They got great wings and they got great. They have the upside down pizza with the really sweet sauce.
Oh, I don't like sweet sauce. That's a big turnoff for me.
Well, I'll just go F myself. Then. Yeah. You don't know Albert's sweet sauce pizza.
Oh, sweet,
you got
sweet
pizza,
sauce pizza.
Pizza wing places?
Pizza wing.
Not sweet,
combos.
But you know, like.
No, I know,
to
I know.
It.
I just, I'm, I, that, it's, that, that for me, like a pizza can be really good. We have those down in Florida. We got these, like, certain places. Oh, this is like New York pizza. And then, like, the sauce is sweet. I'm like, get out of here with this.
Yeah.
Get out of here with this.
What does Henry Hill say at the end? They gave me egg noodles and ketchup. That's you. Nice move. Witness protection program.
That's me. I'm in the witness protection program down in Florida, trying to make it happen. I've been down there for a while too. Just like Henry, when we first got down there.
Henry Hill. Never rat on your friends.
Let me see. I'm trying to. I haven't been on Long Island in a while.
And well, you were after we did our last show. We drove around Long Island.
We did. The East End of Long Island too. Yeah. We were out in the sticks. I felt like
I showed our guy the studio here. Yep. We walked around Bayshore, and then pizza's weird. Like any pizza place is good on Long Island,
right?
Like, and for the most part, like pizza places that have wings also like that's like a perfect football Sunday order. Like I say Albert's. That's my choice. I know they have a few locations. They have one in Copeg, and I think they have one in like Holbrook. I want to say it's real Long Island.
I don't know if we ever, because my house, like when we did fight parties, we didn't get pizza. We barbecue. We would do like big meals, or we'd order like, you know, Italian, like a big Italian, like trays of food. We weren't skimping when we were doing fight parties. So wings and pizza wasn't the go-to. I got a place in Florida that does really good wings and pizza, and it's a Greek place.
Oh god.
Yeah, it's a Greek place. It was on
you have a name?
Yeah, it's what is it? Oh man.
No free ads.
But. Yeah, no free ads. It was, I mean, it, what's his name? Did a pizza review. That's actually how I found it.
Portnoy
did I think it's a Christ, not Christos. It's a Greek spot though.
Christos Steakhouse in Astoria.
No, it's a different place. It was like Christos with an X, but something like that.
Let's move on. Speaking of watch parties.
Hey, what's up, fellas? My question relates to groups of people that you guys have watched fights with. I got lucky enough to watch a fight one time with my buddy Nick, but Nick took me to Hooters in Farmingdale and got to watch a fight with Chris's brother, Tommy Renone, and David Diamante, of all people. It was the craziest thing. It was for Tyson Fury versus Dillian White, and that always like stick out to me as like a really cool combination of people to watch a fight with. So my question to you guys is, you probably watch fights with all kinds of cool people, but does anything stick out, any fight or like a group of people stick out where you just have to pause and be like, wow, I can't believe I'm watching a fight with these people right now? Yes, that's it. All right, take care, guys. Peace.
Good one.
That was a great one. It's a great segue too, because we're literally just talking about fight parties. But
you just doxed your brother going to Hooters.
Yeah, for real. That Hooters of Farmingdale is a staple though on Long Island.
We go for the wings. Yeah. I don't know what else you guys go for. Yeah. I've read somewhere that Hooters is like not like is taking away the waitresses.
What they gonna change their name?
No, just stripping. The full identity.
It's funny because like the Hooters like mascot is an owl. So there's a little workaround there. So that would be a real shame. That would be a sad day.
Hooters wings are good.
They are
like,
very good.
I've been a few times. I'm not one to just go to ogle at the women because that's just like simp behavior. But the Hooters wings are good.
I'm not a wing guy.
The fight with David Diamante and Algieri. And who? What was the other?
And the
one?
Razor.
Tommy Raynone?
The Razor.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And
what a crew.
I remember them, my brother telling me about the conversations that were having. David Diamante was like, oh, Dillian White's going to get it. And my brother was like, no, he's not. No, he's not.
Who do you think of?
I got a lot of good ones.
Go ahead.
Number one, I watched Floyd Mayweather, Canelo Alvarez in the guts of the Paramount sitting shoulder to shoulder with Jerry Cooney.
That's sick. Was that the founder's room?
Yeah, so Joe DiGuardi of Star Boxing did a great job. He did a great job with the Paramount in general, but he had me as the main event early so we could all watch the Canelo Mayweather pay-per-view on pay-per-view.
That's brilliant.
In the Paramount. It was awesome.
That's
so
cool.
I fought the main event. I scored a rare stoppage of a really tough Honduran guy, Guatemala, whatever. And then we sat and watched, the whole room stayed with their ticket to watch.
That's sick.
And I sat next to Jerry Cooney in the founder's room on a couch that's way too small for that big of a man. And we watched Canelo Alvarez and Floyd Mayweather. And he was ripping Mayweather, ripping him. And I was like, he's winning this fight, but I'm sorry.
Everyone hates Mayweather.
Yeah.
Hated me.
Especially
Mayweather.
Old school guys. Jerry's as old school as they get. I'm trying to think. I mean, listen, I call fights next to great people, so there's always that.
That's what I mean. Like, growing up, you know, my dad created CompuBox, so he was ringside, and then the coolest thing in the world was him bringing me along to these fights and getting to sit next to him, and then never knowing who's going to pop up ringside and be watching the fights. I remember I watched Cotto Mosley, November 2007. Great fight at the Garden. Shannon Sharp sitting next to me, talking my ear off. This is before he, this is while he was still in the NFL, just in my ear, just nonstop, just like he is now doing his show with Ocho and being in there. Me and him going back and forth, screaming at each other about how we thought the fight was playing out. Another time, Ari Gold, Jeremy Piven.
Nice.
Probably the most starstruck I've ever been because I had, it was like right in the middle of Entourage, and that was a seminal like show for me and my buddies. And just turning around and seeing Ari, I'm like, Ari Gold. That's like first thing I said to him. And he starts laughing, sitting and like that types of things. Like I never really have.
Was that my fight against Khan? Because he was ringside for that.
I don't know what it was. He was coming to a lot. He's a huge fight fan. Huge like, fight likes a lot of our content. Like I will go to Instagram and see like Jeremy Piven liked one of your reels. He was at a lot of fights.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Like I really are working a lot. And also like, if I'm watching fights at home, I just kind of like to watch them alone, like doing content, still working. So I never really went out to bars to run into people. And if I've ever seen a cool person, it's usually just like people that come to fights.
I got one more random one. Right after, the week after I stopped Tommy Coyle at the Garden, I went to a Matchroom show the following week. And I think it was Triple G... and,
oh, versus Rolls.
And Rolls, right. Steve Rolls. And I sat next to Louis C.K. And
oh, God. I'm, don't shake his hand.
Nah, I mean, he's my favorite. He's my favorite comedian.
And, not because he likes to, you know.
Yeah, but it was right after.
He's all, a master
it was
of his domain.
Right after all of that. And he tweeted me once when I won the world title back in 2014.
Huge boxing fan.
Huge boxing fan. I mean, he boxes too. We talked about we talked the entire time.
So funny.
He spars. Like, he really trains. Like, he's, you know, he actually has a Mexican background. He's another redheaded Mexican.
Wow.
But yeah, we talked about boxing the whole time. We talked about my fight. It was so funny because I come up and I was like, oh man. I didn't want to bother because it was right around that time where he was like getting canceled. And he kind of looked like, oh no, here we go. But he was also like, he introduced me to his lady friend. This is Chris Algieri. He's a very, very good boxer. And I was like, oh, pleasure to meet you. And then we sat next to each other and talked the whole time about the fight.
That's awesome. Recently, getting to watch the fights at Rampage was a big
thing. On a live stream.
That shit was crazy, man. I think me and him are best friends. I texted him. He didn't answer. But, you know, he'll get back. He's probably busy.
Yo, this is Jaquan J. Kelly calling from New York. Shout out to the show. Y'all are doing an amazing job. Shout out to Chris also for the Fight for 84 Netflix film. That's amazing. I'm an actor myself. I actually audition for a few of the lead roles, but I didn't get those. We're not going to talk about that, though. What we are going to talk about is if I were to create a film on any active boxer currently, right now, whose story do you think would be worth telling? And two, which boxer do you think would gravitate to a film on their life? Which one would be most excited about it?
Yeah, I think he went on a little bit there, but I'm going to throw a curveball here. Got a baseball in my hand. You probably never heard of this fighter. Julian Quiet Storm Smith. He is blind. No, sorry.
Deaf.
He's deaf.
Yes, I do know him, yes.
He's not blind and deaf. He's not Helen Keller. He is just deaf, and he won a bunch of fights on the MVP circuit.
Yep.
He beat a top 10 guy a few years ago. One of the most inspirational things I've ever seen. I was legit in tears when he won that fight. Over the top 10 guy. That would be my choice. You said active.
So I know. The active thing, that threw me for a curve.
There's a lot of active fighters that have great stories.
Yes.
Every fighter has amazing story. That's why there's so many boxing movies.
I think I'm going to go with a pretty obvious one. Alexander Usyk.
The Usyk story.
Usyk story. Because also he's such an interesting character. You know, like he looks the part. He does movies, by the way. He's in movies. He's in fight movies. But also, I think with the Ukrainian war conflict going on, all of that, you know, he's current guy. He's a bit of an underdog, too. Like, he's always kind of struggled. Like, win the gold, win the cruiser, win the heavy. Epic fights. I think he's just such an interesting guy. I think he would fit in perfectly. I think who else?
I mean, a lot of these guys have come, like Richard Hitchens has literally come from nothing. There's a common theme with boxers, for the most part, is like coming from absolute poverty, crime, getting out of trouble and making it in life. Like Richard Hitchens made it.
Yeah.
He came out of the hood. I'm just thinking of one guy pops to my head because I saw him tweet about how he didn't have any money like 10 years ago. He was about to get evicted, or his mom got evicted, and Shakur Stevenson helped get him into a Powerade commercial. And the Powerade commercial helped pay his mom's apartment and then some.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I thought it was such a cool story, and people were somehow finding a way to criticize it. I hate Twitter. I hate it. Because they're like, look at Shakur. Like, oh, Shakur has all these friends, like, in boxing. Like, oh, God forbid you have friends. Like, you guys did not have friends in real life? Like, okay, that's my rant. That's it.
Okay, one more. Maybe, I would say AJ, too. AJ, I think, would be a good one. He's, I mean, obviously...
Especially this stage of his career.
Yeah, now. You got the ups and the downs. You got the highest highs. You got some bad lows. You got, obviously, tragedy with his friends and family. I think there's a lot of meat on that bone.
Fury.
Yeah,
do we have enough of Fury?
Fury's got the TV shows. That's not doing a movie.
We're probably missing, I think.
We're definitely missing because it's...
Let someone in the comments hit us with that. It's a good question. Let's get to the next one.
Optimus Dan and the Champ CA. It's your boy Rose from the So Ill. NFL draft was a couple months ago, so it got me wondering. Is there a prospect that you thought was destined for the big time that never made it for whatever reason, or somebody who you didn't think had the chops that did make it? For me, it was Devin Alexander. I thought he was going to be the next wrong-handed Hitman Hearns, or Timothy Bradley, who I thought feet were too slow and hands were too slow. What do you think?
Good question.
I got one. I thought Chris Algieri was never going to make it out of the Paramount basement.
I was dug in deep down. I actually had a long conversation with Ron Katz about this and how I was getting buried at the Paramount because I was popular and that no one wanted to give me a chance, including my promoter, didn't want me to leave the Paramount, just wanted me to run shows for there forever because they always made money, and I forced his hand to get me onto the world stage. I told him, I was like, I'm world class. I can't be on Long Island. I need to get out of here. I need people.
It's like leaving your hometown.
I need people to see me. I always told him that. I was like, I need to be on TV. I need people to see me. I'm good. I'm really good. Like I'm world class.
Spread your wings.
Yeah. I didn't want to be a local hero. That's one. That's too little too normal.
I got one. Just comes to mind right away. Jared Anderson. I still think he has time to erase it. I still think he has time to change the course of his career. But like, he was the guy. Like, people were comparing him to Riddick Bowe. He's from Brooklyn. Like, this is the next guy. He's going to be heavyweight champ, American heavyweight champ, take the mantle from Wilder. And, you know, a lot of stuff out of the ring, the loss to Piccoli. And then, you know, I don't think he really enjoys boxing. That comes to mind right away in terms of a guy that hasn't reached his potential yet.
Yeah. David Reed, for me. I thought David Reed was going to be, like, the next thing, the next it, which a lot of people did. And that did not work out, obviously. I mean, he became a world champion. Like, don't get me wrong. Still phenomenal in terms of what he did in a very short period of time. But he was a guy that there was huge expectations that just did not pan out.
I like the Bradley one. I like
that. Yeah, that was good.
We always gravitate towards the guys that haven't fulfilled, the guys that overachieved.
Yeah. Tim is the consummate overachiever. Like, you watching him get dropped by Kendall Holt, like, brutally, and being like, no way, is this guy, and then goes on to have an illustrious career, fights Pacquiao 3 times. Marquez. I tell Tim, whenever I talk to him, I'm like, yo, that Marquez fight, dude, that's the best. That's the best fight of your career. He outboxed Marquez. Like, it was crazy. He that was his.
And that was
best
coming off of the Pacquiao trilogy, right? Was that in between it?
No. That was I think that was in between. It was after the Ruslan fight.
Damn, and the Ruslan fight took.
Ugh. Yeah, that took years of my life watching it.
You fought that guy too. Let's get into it.
Hi, this is David from Jersey City again. What do you think Tank's comeback route should be? I was thinking him fighting Kid Austin for his WBA mandatory, then unifying with Lamont Roach if he gets past Cepeda by the end of the year. Do you think that would be enough to put Tank back into talks at lightweight? And then at that point, if he wins, he'll be a unified champion.
Yeah, if Roach beats Cepeda.
I think if all he has to do is beat Schofield, and I think he's back in the mix.
Yeah.
You beat
I think Tank can do whatever he wants, really.
Yeah, he's that level of star.
He can go to ring. He can finally take the ring money, which would not surprise me at all. Like, I did not think Canelo would do it. And look, he is hand in hand with Turkey. Like, I think Tank, he's retired, but he's one of the only guys that did not participate with Turkey because he's so loyal to PBC and Al. But Tank, I mean, just so many, he's such an interesting subject because, yeah, Schofield right there, fight, get your WBA title back. Rematch Roach, which would be a big fight because it has all the drama.
Win, or Zepeda. Zepeda fight would be good too.
Either of those. Become a WBC champion. Tank has never cared about belts, but he, there is a path right here. Two fights. Then fight Shakur. And then go off into the sunset. I think that's all boxing fans are asking from Tank. Because I'll agree. Like, it's not as fun boxing without Tank in it. This guy is like fun to watch. He has all of his problems outside the ring. I'm not agreeing or co-signing anything that he's done outside of the ring. But when this guy fights, it's must-watch TV, and I'm not done watching him. Like, I still want to see him fight Shakur. They would want to potentially see him, watch him fight all these guys. So I think he can literally do whatever he wants because he's one of the five guys out there like that are their own economy, like you like to say.
Yeah, he moves the needle. I mean, we've been to Tank fights. They're all spectacles. They're great. You know, the culture around it is great. It's a really nice ecosystem when guys like that fight. The Canelos, the Tank Davises, once upon a time, Errol Spence was like that. You know, Manny Pacquiao. Like, you get these certain guys that are cultural movements that everybody comes out for. And we severely lack that in our sport today.
Bro, this guy was selling out Staples. He sold out Barclays. He sold out Atlanta. He was going to be on his way to selling out Miami with Jake. And then, you know, I saw him on stream with
Broner and Dean.
He looked really like super skinny.
Yeah. That's something. He used to get like a little like chubby in between fights. And in recent years, like, he's so locked in. He's always like thin and in shape.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm rooting for him to come back. I know it comes with a lot of issues. Like, once again, don't agree with a lot of stuff he's done outside the ring. But this is a flawed sport. You guys are all flawed humans, Chris. I'm not lumping you in with Jonathan Davis.
No,
but
no question about it. We all have our demons.
Yo, what up, guys? Though, quick question. It's about Lomachenko coming back into the picture. Assuming he wins that fight to get him basically a shot at a title, do you think he is, I mean, obviously we haven't seen him fight in the Kambosos fight, but do you think he's favorite to win against Navarrete or Noshaki Foster if he were to face them, you know? And do you think he'd be able to actually pull off an undisputed with the 130 division not looking too stacked right now?
It's a good question.
Good question.
I think that's what Loma's going for.
Yeah, who's he fighting? Did they say yet?
No, he's, last I heard, he's got to fight the Suarez guy.
Oh, right.
Get the mandatory Charlotte shot at... Even though I'm like, we really have to go through all that? Can we just make Lomachenko Navarrete?
It's tough when you got a guy who's coming off that long of a layoff and is older. I mean, we've seen it.
Got no time on. Time is not on his side.
No. I don't think he'd be favored in Navarrete or Foster, honestly.
Yeah, because of the time off, right?
The time off, age, activity. He's going to have to try. Suarez is not an easy fight. Suarez is tough, but I think Suarez is a perfect re-entry because Suarez is older too. I think Suarez is like 34, 35. So I think that's...
It wasn't trying to discredit Suarez.
No. Suarez is good. He's tough, but it's like, that's even going to be a tough fight because Suarez is literally fighting for his entire life and career, every fight, which we saw in the Navarrete fight. Yeah, I think he beats Suarez. I think he'll get, but it's not going to be easy. And I don't see him being favored to win either of the fights, Navarrete or Foster. I think he has a better shot with Navarrete. But it's just going to depend on how much his older body is willing to take.
Yeah, that's a long road. Like, undisputed is the only thing Lomachenko did not accomplish in his...
I don't know if he's coming back career for that. I think he's coming back because there's so much money around.
Well, if that's the case, then I thought he would go for Shakur. I did not see him going this route.
Yeah, but like one big Shakur fight, or, you know, three fights that you can potentially, like, I don't think he beats Shakur.
So. Would you want one? Less work for more money. It's the dream.
No, I'd want to come back and like get cooking and then get a big fight.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Chris. This is John from MKE. I got two words for you. Inoue Bam, the biggest small fight of all time. What are your thoughts on this electric matchup?
Fucking love it. it's sick. Best little man fight of all time. I think it's a good way to put it.
I think it probably is.
Do it in Japan.
Well, there's talk. I saw a rumor of Netflix being interested in it.
Yeah, of course. It's huge. Huge. Global. That's global, dude.
If Netflix is interested, they did an overseas fight with Fury. I don't know if like Netflix's interest or Netflix airing it means that it will be an American fight. I don't really care where it happens.
No, I don't think they do either. I don't think Bam does.
There's a big push for this fight. Like, I there was another call here. I don't know if we'll get to it, but it's like, is Bam rushing into this fight because Turkey wants it? Is Turkey being in boxing with the big money, is it rushing careers? Or the flip side of it is we don't get the fights when we get the fights too late. So, like, pick your poison here as a fan. Like, I think Bam is ready for an Inoue fight because there might not be a payday like this down the road. There might be an opportunity like this down the road.
Say what you will about rushing your career. When you have opportunities to fight legends, yeah, you rush your career. I had an opportunity to fight Pacquiao. It wasn't the best time for me to fight Pacquiao, but that had to take my opportunity. And Inoue is not going to be here for long. And I mean, in the sport generally, but also the weight classes for this fight, they could be like two ships passing in the night. If Inoue goes to 26 and Bam's just trying to chase him, it's done. It's done. This fight's never happening. So this is the only time this fight could actually happen. So is he rushing to a degree? But guess what? We all rush for opportunities when they present themselves if you dare to be great.
One knock on the little guys is there's not many big fights.
Yeah.
There's not big, like Inoue is the big fight. I just talked about. It's like, you know, the guys that create their own economy, Inoue is that. So Bam's probably looking at it like this. Okay, if I lose to Inoue, and he very much well could, I think Inoue would be the favorite.
Yeah.
Bam loses that fight, but he makes $10 million. And what else is out there for him if he doesn't fight Inoue? It's these fights, you know, no offense to Antonio Vargas, but that's who he's fighting next, Bam. He's beating these older guys, but he's making good money because he has a good deal with Matchroom. But where's the super fight for Bam?
It's Inoue.
So do it now.
And even though there's a Nakatani fight looming as well, which is a huge, huge fight.
I like that one too.
It's not an Inoue.
Still get that though.
Yeah, I think we do get that. We will get that. They might fight a couple times, but the opportunity to fight Inoue is now. And if it doesn't happen in the next 6 to 8 months, and we never see it.
Hi, so from what I researched in your episodes, it seems as though you and Chris Algieri are against the Muhammad Ali American Boxing Revival Act. I was just curious, what are the biggest problems that you have with this amendment that's being pushed through Senate right now? Thank you, guys. Great show.
Thank you for this important question. I played all the fun ones in the beginning. This is a serious one. This is how we're ending the show.
The issue is concentration of power and the muddling of what the essence of the original Muhammad Ali Act was to be. It was to protect fighters from double dipping. Managers and promoters acting the same way. This kind of abolishes that, and it allows the opportunity of creating your own ranking system, creating your own belts. What do they call the UBOs?
Yeah,
creating UBOs. So it goes back to that old saying, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. So if all the power is concentrated in one place, the risk of taking advantage of fighters is far too great. And also there's just no way for the fighters to combat situations where they are getting exploited. And that's the biggest issue. That's what the original, again, the essence of the Muhammad Ali Act was, to not have fighters be exploited. And it's just, it muddies the water. I don't know how this is all going to pan out. We can't tell with the future. And I'm not saying absolutely it's going to be the worst thing ever, or that it's even necessarily a bad thing, or it's going to ruin the sport per se. But the opportunity for fighters to get the short end of the stick just seems way, way too within reach, with the way things are going.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think it's just like, the whole thing I don't like is making it feel like a corporate vibe. Mm-hmm. And that's more of a Zuffa thing, but I'm kind of lumping Zuffa in with the Muhammad Ali Revival Act because it's pretty much the same thing. It's benefiting Zuffa. I don't know if you saw this, Donald Trump invested in either TKO or TKO's the company above TKO, which is not good. I mean, that's why this is moving so fast, getting through all the red tape and all that. It's just, when it comes down to, I'm lumping both of them in. Like, we're talking about the Ali Act. There's things in it that I don't like. There's things in it that I do like. Mostly, I don't like it. And I'm lumping in it with Zuffa, and I've talked about this numerous times. I don't like the corporate vibe of it. I don't like me turning into a corporation. I don't like stripping the individuality of it. I don't like the uniforms. I don't like potentially having one organization ruling down, that we've seen in UFC with Dana White. That's not the best thing, because they have these freezes out fighters, these ridiculous contracts that go on for years and years. You know, like John Jones is in purgatory now. I get it, don't sign the contract, but also, like, it's just, they're not fighter friendly. They're not. They can say they are, but I ultimately don't think they are. They're gonna be fighter friendly for guys that the lower part portion of yeah. boxing, mm-hmm. but it's never gonna reach like that super fight feel. We're gonna see it play out. But at a glance, those are the things that I don't like about it. And it's more of a Zuffa thing. But like I said, like, Zuffa will reach their powers once this act gets passed. And it will.
For the record, I didn't like the original Muhammad Ali Act. I thought that it just did not have any, it didn't have any teeth. It didn't really give any power. But it just brought to light that there are issues here. So a fighter could potentially be like, hey, look, this is against, you know, I have something to stand on. Even, again, it didn't have any teeth. I used it. It helped me in court. But, you know, and not, some fighters did, not a lot did. But the guys who do have any kind of victory fighting against the man, that was how we did it. And that's what we said. I think the Muhammad Ali Act, the original one, needed to be expanded to help fighters and to protect fighters from being taken advantage of.
Yep. All right. That's all on the show. Hope everyone has a good weekend. We'll be watching Zuffa. With that being said, I'll be watching Zuffa.
And Pro Box. Pro Box tomorrow. We got Pro Box tomorrow.
Pro Box Friday night.
From Tejas.
From Texas. I hope you see some Spurs fans and you laugh in their face.
Oh, they're hiding.
Don't laugh too hard.
They're in hiding right now, dude. You asked me this
Don't
morning.
Don't laugh too hard.
I walked around Arlington this morning to drink my coffee, and I was like, Dan asked me, he's like, oh, you see any crying San Antonio fans? I'm not in San Antonio, but I think they're all hiding, licking their wounds.
Well, the Mavericks fans, where you were at. Dallas Mavericks. Play near you where you're at. Yeah, don't laugh too hard because the series is not over.
Yeah.
But, you know, 70% of teams that win game one go on to win the NBA finals.
Is that the percentage? 70%?
Yes. Yes.
Well, if you analyze the game and the ebbs and flows of it, this could be a really tricky
heavyweight matchup. Would you say it was?
This is a, what did I say? No,
I'm just saying, like, they always say that on, like, when there's a back and forth game. Oh. I guess there was a back and forth game. They were taking their best punches. The broadcaster will always say, this is like a heavyweight boxing match.
Every sport compares itself to boxing. Fight sports rule.
Someone tweeted, this is like Hagler Hearns, the first quarter.
Yes. I love the
being the Hagler of it.
Right. A lot of crossover boxing terminology here with crossover sport terminology being utilized here. I like it.
All right, everyone. Have a good weekend. We'll be back on Sunday recapping it all. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs.